The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Yes, 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 we are back. And listen, if you want to join the conversation and you actually want to watch this live,
1 p.m.
Go ahead. And you actually want to watch this live or you want to check out the replay, go head out to the Freedom 106.5 YouTube channel where all of our interviews are live streamed. And then also many of you ask every single time, where can we go and listen back to the interview? You can now go and check out the YouTube page. So go subscribe to Freedom 106.5 FM. You guys can go and actually watch this conversation happen live. And again, if you're not watching live, that's okay. You can always go and watch the replay. So today, listen, I always get excited for our guests because I think a lot of the topics that are being addressed are just really, really critical for our development moving forward. So here's the thing. We know when it comes to artificial intelligence, 2026 has been the year where we are seeing this thing implemented in so many different ways, shapes, or forms. It's in all the headlines. It's in our workplaces. It's in almost every single conversation about the future of business. And while AI might be the biggest buzzword of the moment, how many businesses are genuinely ready to use it? And that was actually one of the big themes of yesterday's conversation at the AI symposium in Tobago. How many businesses, you know, in TNT are really primed to use AI within the business right now? We're not just talking about using it as a search engine. Being AI ready is not simply about subscribing to the latest tools or asking employees to experiment with ChatGPT. No, it means having the right leadership, the right people, the right processes, having the right data, the infrastructure, and the governance in place to use AI responsibly and turn it into meaningful business value. And this is especially important for us here in the Caribbean because where many organizations are still moving very slow with digital adoption, the danger is believing that AI, the market, and our competitors will wait until we feel completely ready. Yeah. Folks, I hate to burst your bubble. They will not. What is already happening inside the world's most advanced organizations? What does it mean to have an AI-ready business? What does that actually look like? That's what we're going to be diving into today. So joining us on the program is Mr. Klaus Feldam, the CEO and founder of Phalaris Global, an operational technology and AI consultancy with offices in Atlanta, Port of Spain, and Zurich. He is originally from Denmark. Klaus has built his career across Denmark, the UK, and for the past 20 years, the United States. And over more than three decades, he has led global technology and digital transformation initiatives for regulated multinational organizations across four continents. He has also recently represented the private sector at the United Nations inaugural Global Dialogue on AI Governance. Through Phalaris Global, Klaus now works directly with business and government leaders in TNT to establish meaningful governance around AI and help organizations become genuinely AI ready while keeping value and ownership within the region. He is an avid hiker, a longtime lover of reggae, dub, dancehall, and he can't forget soca and pan. And he has been visiting Trinidad regularly for the last 35 years. So he's no stranger to danger. You could meet him on the Quizzy, right? he says he's not quite an honorary Trini yet, but he is working on it. Klaus, welcome to the digital world. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for that introduction, Karen. Really appreciate it. I'm actually in Trinidad overlooking a beautiful sea out here. It's fantastic to be back. I love the place. And yes, I am indeed working on that honorary Trinidad status. You know, that. Yeah, so.
I'm loving the office. I'm loving the office. I'm loving the office.
Right. Well, it is actually outside, right? So yeah, it's fantastic. I love it here.
This is one of the beautiful things. This is one of the beautiful things I love about the digital age that we are in is that work gets to really happen anywhere that you have an internet connection on a computer. Yeah. So if you could work from anywhere, why not work from a nice remote spot with a beautiful view and sea breeze in the background. Why not?
Oh, come on, yeah.
Absolutely. And beautiful music, beautiful people, beautiful culture, you know, so absolutely.
This is what we are, this is what we're talking about. So I want to thank you for taking the time and joining us on today's program. And before we talk about becoming businesses, or before we get into, you know, businesses becoming AI ready, you know, help us understand the moment that we are living through right now. I want to really break this down. Is AI simply another technological advancement, or are we experiencing something that is more of a foundational shift in the time period that we are in?
Well, it's clear to me that we are going through a tremendous change right now. This is really a fundamental change, as you were talking about 2026 really being a key milestone for organizations, for countries. And we see that with all of the dialogue that's happening on an international level. Participated also recently in the CCU conference, the AI forum in Trinidad. And time is now. And as you also challenged us, we are not going to able to be getting through this time by sitting down and waiting for things to happen. AI is not waiting for us, and we better get on the train.
Wow. Now, I want to ask a question, Mr. Feldham. Now, you've been in technology for a long time, literally more than 30 years, but I know we just established the fact that it's happening and AI is here, but how do you feel about it? Because you've been here, you've seen technology come and go. You've seen technology like the internet and everything come from nothing to something.
The dot-com bubble.
You've seen it all. How do you feel about it now?
Y2K countdown.
Yeah, you know, I actually started my journey when I was 2 years old. No. I actually seriously started that journey when the personal computer got introduced, right? So I've been through several of those, and you mentioned the dot-com and the cloud wave, where everything needed to be cloud and so forth, right? And now we're seeing another one, but this one is different, right? This is not a wave. This is maybe a little bit of a tsunami. Sorry about the noise. But yeah, it's a bit of a tsunami. You know, back to your question, Curtis, that's a really good question. I'm actually really excited about it, because one of the things that have carried me through my career is not technology by itself. It's the change that technology can enable for companies, for organizations, for countries, and so forth. And that is what has driven me. That's what made me excited. Seeing the potential of AI now for individuals, for organizations, for countries, for regions, for the world, I think is very exciting. Of course, there are some guardrails that we need to put up around it, which we'll going to talk a bit about. But I think that we have tremendous opportunities, and I'm very excited about being part of that journey.
Klaus, what do people fail to understand about AI, you know, as we are in I don't even know how we got to August already, but as of August 2026, AI, for the most part, is still a very much big buzzword to the average person, to a lot of the small to medium-sized businesses. At best, the average person thinks it's a better Google.
Yeah.
What do you think people are failing to understand about what AI actually is?
Well, I think that we are failing as leaders to really articulate very well what AI can do for us, and which means, you know, you hear the headlines of organizations firing yet another X thousand employees because of AI, right? And AI becomes the culprit, right? That it's because of AI that we had to make this change. I disagree with some of those statements for multiple reasons, right? Because, you know, if you have to make changes to your organization, you want to be more efficient, you know, those are good leadership decisions to make. to stop blaming on the AI, right? It's about improvement, it's about progress. Change is constant, as we know. And change also is something that's very scary for many people. And therefore, we need to change the dialogue around AI, what it can do for us. And that comes with us as leaders taking a different approach to talking about AI, what the potentials are, and stop hyping it up, right? Because with hype and uncertainty also comes fear. And we're seeing a lot of that with many people, many organizations also that I come across have failed to move, or they have moved but in the wrong direction. And so forth. I think with something that is moving as fast as AI is, I think we need to start taking communication and change management seriously.
That's good.
So we can all get on the same page.
That's good. And because Karen, and we see these symptoms of lack of what you're talking about in terms of change management, whereas anything to do with AI that is in the news, it comes across like bad news to persons. You would see the comments, the general conversation within the comments is all fear-based, because I think it has a lot to do with how fast, as you mentioned, it's a tsunami. And nobody's controlling the fact that it's a tsunami, but we don't have the mechanisms in place to manage that change that people can comfortably take one step at a time. And I think that's strong what you just shared. I actually wrote that down. Change management is what we need.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, Klaus. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just had one quick thought, because what adds to some of the fear also and apprehension with individuals, and I must admit I am a little bit on that side of the fence on this particular topic, that is that 75% of all AI activity and investment and so forth is coming out of one country. And is led by multi-billionaires and, you know, who's controlling AI from that perspective, right? And we need to be very careful about AI not becoming commercial in its drive. We need to apply governance. We need to make sure that voices are heard across the world. And we need to come up with a serious plan for regions like the Caribbean to be actively involved and more than involved, also have a sovereign access to the information that should be controlled by the region. And not just in the Caribbean, but that was part of the UN dialogue that I participated in 5 or 6 weeks ago, and you heard the same concerns from around the world. And I'm happy that dialogue is open, and we're seeing a lot of changes happening and moving in the right direction, so we can get the AI's development and focus away just from a few hands.
I'm glad you brought up the UN inaugural Global Dialogue on AI Governance conversation. Mm-hmm. Because you being there, what did you hear or observe there that the Caribbean leaders urgently need to kind of understand and wrap their mind around?
Well, I think what I heard, the 192 nations were present and regions like Africa, Asia, Pacific, and others were actively involved in what I thought was just going to be a conference, but actually they called it a global dialogue, and it truly was a global dialogue. What I was incredibly encouraged about was that the UN is taking this topic seriously around AI governance, and wanting to make sure that we all participate in a dialogue how we can make AI available for humanity, with humanity, and by humanity. So AI is not taking over. It's not driven by commercial interests. But I think back to the other part of your question was, you know, what do we need to know here in the Caribbean, and Caribbean leaders need to understand? I think that it is involvement, it's engagement, it's time to take AI seriously. In the CTU conference, in the AI forum a few weeks ago, we were talking about this is a very important dialogue, but we cannot just talk about it. Dialogue. We now need to have action behind the words and the intentions, turning the intentions into real commitments. And that, again, touches on leadership. We need to see leadership involvement from government and from private sector.
Wow. No, I want to shift now, coming out of that conference and that conversation. What does AI readiness pretty much really look like? Is it hearing people having the right conversation, the right words being used to know if they're AI ready, or that the speed of how a business responds? What does AI readiness look like to you? Because not AI implementation, but readiness. What does that look like to you?
There's a number of different components that play into AI readiness. And first of all, we need to raise the AI literacy.
Yeah.
The AI literacy amongst the decision makers in organizations, public and private organizations. We need to raise the AI literacy amongst employees, amongst the population. So we need to make AI training available. And then also to make it more tangible, we need action. And what I mean by that is an example that I am discussing with UWI at the moment, University of West Indies at St. Augustine, is some of the very specific programs that they have in place. And what this means to me is that we need to see tangible pilots. We need to explore in difference across different sectors what and how can AI assist with, right? And I'm incredibly encouraged by the conversations I'm having with UWI about many of their different programs. They have 10 different initiatives going on around climate resilience, renewable energy, healthcare, agriculture, cybersecurity, etc., and with specific goals in mind to turn their research into products, into services that can be actively used in communities, in organizations, by governments, and so forth. And that's what we need to do. Pilots will drive this forward, right? But it starts at AI literacy with decision makers, AI literacy with employees and population.
You see, everything that you just said there, I see that in real time in Asia. So you're going into the mall. So I'm in Bangkok. I can walk 2 minutes from my place, and there's, you could check this out because this might be of interest to you. There's a place called True Digital Park. It's a massive business SME ecosystem in Asia. They just built an AI institute, so you can go in there. All the companies, the Huawei's, Dell's, IBM's, they all have a presence inside of this ecosystem, and they put on workshops every single day for a variety of different topics and different things. I think what amazes me with Asia is how fast they're able to roll things out to the public. So in China, I was in China the other day, they had rolled out Claude code classes in the malls, and they were telling everybody, wow, bring your laptops, we will set up open claw. Like, they set up workshops inside of malls to set up open claw and give you a crash course on agents, and they're doing that in the malls. Yeah. So just to see the speed at how the Chinas, Thailands, Malaysias, to see how they are rolling these things out. So we talk a lot, and I love the fact that you said, you know, we have to go beyond, you know, just the dialogue now, but just seeing it
in Asia actually rolled out and working, and the crowds flocking in is really a testament into where their, you know, where their governments are. So, you know, from where you sit, when you're thinking about the different governments and how different countries, different governments are approaching, you know, upskilling their nations, upskilling their citizenry, sensitizing their citizens to the new world that we are in, the AI tools that we're using, you know, what are some of the best countries doing, you know, from where you sit?
I think some of the best countries, they understand that communication, as I mentioned earlier, is key. You know, and bringing the population, the private sector, the public sector into a dialogue where it demystifies the whole topic around AI, right? And removes the fear, right? The uncertainties that AI can bring for people. And I don't think that I have a good example of one country one nation, but I have examples of organizations where I see it actually working really well across a number of countries. One example recently is, I was extremely excited to see this, was Novo Nordisk, which is a medical device manufacturer out of Europe, Denmark, in fact. They have announced maybe 5 or 6 months ago that they have made a strategic partnership with Amazon around AI. So AWS is their preferred partner, and they are moving forward. So that cool, that was a nice announcement. But just last week, what they said is that they have now established an innovation center in London, where they are taking the words and the intentions into action, right? So they have put the Amazon team and the Novo Nordisk teams together to develop products to improve patient outcomes, right? And that's where you are leveraging technology to improve people's health, right? That I think that is incredibly exciting. Uh-huh. And I think private industries will, in my mind, be driving some of this innovation, if not most of this innovation. And governments need to get alongside those initiatives or get out of the way, to be honest. And not prevent such initiatives, right? Because if you can put a program together that and resources together, invest I don't know how much money and resource and time into such an initiative that I'm talking about here with Novo Nordisk and Amazon, but yeah, with a particular purpose. This is not just let's do something cool. No, let's help change people's lives. You know, that the when organizations, governments, and so forth, they really get their minds around the capabilities of AI and demystify the whole topic and start looking for specific outcomes, specific opportunities like you is doing, I think that's where we are starting to see progress, where you know, these pilots develop into actual solutions, and people in communities, people in organizations will benefit from it directly. And that, of course, will start taking some of the fear away as well.
Hmm. Curtis, before you come in, Curtis, I just want to tackle one thing. I love the fact that you said leadership, leaders need to start to demystify, because what is part of our biggest problem is our leaders have done a lot of fear-mongering. So the former prime minister went on a public platform in government and told everybody that he was the very last person to set up a to do direct deposits into his bank accounts because he doesn't trust the financial system. That was our previous prime minister. Our current prime minister, just a couple of months ago, was telling everybody nobody should be doing anything cashless because the government can use cashless transactions to hold your money hostage. This is what our prime minister, our two prime ministers have said publicly, right? The demystifying, we've been doing the opposite.
Yeah. We've been mystifying.
We've been fear-mongering. So I'm glad that you said what you said, because I honestly think that if we are ever going to have real adoption in Trinidad and Tobago, at some point our prime minister needs to come out and be like, hey, guys, you know, I was wrong, but I am learning the technology, yeah, and I'm seeing the benefit. Like, something has to happen to kind of bridge that gap,
yeah,
to show that show of faith, because there was a lot of time spent fear-mongering. This is not, yeah, to be political or anything like that, but just from a demystifying perspective and to start building that trust in the institutions and in the tools, it starts from the top, and that is a relationship that we definitely have to repair if we are going to move forward.
I totally agree with you. I think any government leader, and that's true of Tobago, Trinidad and Tobago, it's true of most nations that I can think, yeah, of. Each of the government leaders, they are really the chief communicating officer when it comes to AI. And if they do not understand that, fear that we see in the public will continue for longer. They own, and we as leaders, business leaders and so forth, we own the communication, the change management, as we talked about in the beginning.
Now, one of the things I'm thinking about is how do we communicate what AI can actually do for people? I think that is really important, because what people's experience with AI so far, we have to accept what their experience is. And most people's experience with AI has all been online, meaning on social media. They have not interacted with AI. They don't even know if they have, if they had. And their experience so far would be one where they would see certain persons just maybe creating fake pictures or creating something online that is changing reality and creating something fake, creating a fake article. There's so many use cases online that they've seen as to, that is the reason why I don't want to use it. That's why I don't want to use it. But you just said something that most people will not consider. The way how our health system could be transformed by the implementation of AI. Could you just share more industries that might be impacted by AI, AI adoption that would actually move the needle and change the quality of people's lives? You said healthcare.
Right. Healthcare, with the example that I brought, is a natural one, right? Yeah. Health impacts us all, either directly or indirectly through friends and family and so forth. Yeah. So that's a huge one, and that shouldn't be underestimated.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's exactly that's in that huge area that I'm having conversations with Yui. But there are a number of other opportunities that would impact people directly. I like Karen's examples of making some of these AI initiatives and classes and so forth available publicly, mm-hmm, have AI centers where people can go to and touch and feel and I think it goes back to Curtis, the AI pilots that I'm talking about, where I think the best ideas, they don't come from us as technologists and experts in AI. It comes from a combination of us working with business leaders, for us to understand what business challenges business leaders have, and how can we work with them in making solutions available for the public that can make a real difference.
Yeah.
You name it, right? Because there are all aspects of our lives that could be positively impacted with technology improvements, driven by AI, right? From you know, agriculture to productivity within organizations, right? Many of us, we spend a lot of time away from home, but because of work, right? So we work in organizations where there are tools being used. I may be working in a warehouse where there are trucks driving around or something like that, where we can start using, for example, autonomous robots integrated into a warehouse setting that can help bring product from the warehouse shelves out to the picking and packing areas and so forth. And so seeing, not just in the malls and in on our phones and so forth, AI at work, but in real life.
Yeah.
It's a life. Go ahead, Curtis.
No, I was saying that when you mentioned agriculture, I've just seen maybe 2 days ago a video of drones actually spraying and watering fields in Absolutely. Trinidad Tobago. Yeah. I think maybe you might have seen it.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think seeing those use cases more than just a fake picture being altered online and a fake, story is actually going to make people say, hold up a minute here, we can eat healthier, we can grow better crops, we can live in faster, our time in banks can be cut down to nothing, our productivity, we don't have to spend 8 hours a day at the office, that's what you're telling me, we could cut it down to 2. I think when we start seeing more real use cases or communicating more real use cases to the population other than just editing stuff online, I think it will really move the needle for us.
You see, Curtis, and that is one of the reasons why I would love for us, for leadership, government, whoever possible, because we are in the Caribbean and we are a collection of small island developing states, the exposure to some of the technologies and the use cases hasn't reached the areas yet. I was in China the other day when we went to one of the EV factories, NIU. We went to their dark factory where there's 1,200 robots. It looks like Hogwarts inside there with things just moving around autonomously. And there's only 150 humans working in the facility, and there's almost no noise. Seeing these things happening, seeing drone delivery, robot delivery, seeing these things and experiencing them opens up your mind to what is possible. So we definitely have to figure out how we could start to get people seeing some of the best of AI and autonomous, you name it. But getting people to experience it, I think, would open up a lot of eyes and a lot of minds to what is possible.
Something that I spend a lot of time speaking with senior leaders about at the moment, not just in Trinidad and Tobago, but also in the U.S., is exactly this topic and around how can we better leverage the power of AI. So let's talk for a minute about tools like ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, etc. There's so much focus in the world that we live in. Karen, I don't know how it is in Asia, but maybe you can speak to that in a minute, where the focus is on those tools and the productivity that the individual can gain from them. And so that's what you see a lot on social media, and a lot of the training is centered around what can I learn? And that's great. Individual productivity in an organization is great. But what if I work in a company where there's 100 people, 500 people, 5,000 people, and I have very complex business processes? Productivity for me doesn't really work as well as if we trained everybody on the team, and not just training them, but around AI governance. AI governance is not just a rule set. AI governance is also a conversation that is much needed at senior leadership level in private and public organizations around how can we as an organization ensure that we're not just having productive individuals, but we also have productive teams, functions, and the whole organization. And that can very easily happen, but we are not talking much about it. And that is around using shared skills, shared templates that we build up within our AI tools, so that an entire, let's say, accounts payable function, they don't have Bob and Sally and Klaus and Curtis and Karen doing their own thing, right? Because I may be using Gemini, you know, and Karen, you may be using ChatGPT and so forth. So individually, we are productive, but as a team, we are running off in different directions. We are getting different results. We may not be prompting the same way and so forth. I may be less advanced than Curtis and so forth, right? So we are running literally in different directions in teams if we are not organized. And that's where a governance, a healthy governance conversation can come in and help make some of these decisions available around how do we share effectively and how do we move forward as teams, as departments, as functions, and ultimately as an organization.
Klaus, as a follow-up to that, I want to read a quote from Nikesh Arora, who's the CEO from Palo Alto Networks, right? I think it's a good follow-up. He had a quote the other day that had me sit down, and I had to really think about this one. He said, workers have to learn. He's like, I cannot send them to university. There's no course you can take in any school anywhere. They have to be able to learn on their own. And Palo Alto is in cybersecurity, and he was speaking to the rate of change that is happening within that specific space. He's like, there is no school that I can send anybody to. People have to learn on their own. So if that's the premise where education just can't keep up and everybody has to learn on their own, well then, if I like ChatGPT because it sounds cool and Klaus, you like Gemini because it sounds cool, so you skill up in Gemini, I skill up in ChatGPT, Curtis is on our team too, so he skills up in Claude. And everybody's learning at their own, then how do we get on the same page?
No governance. Yeah, that has to be
did we lose Klaus for a second?
Yeah, just frozen for a bit. And I think that I've never thought about it along those lines, in terms of AI fluency or adoption, because again, we are all learning at the same time, and it could be in various direction, yeah?
I think Klaus is back.
Yeah, I'm back. There's a little bit of a storm coming in.
No worries.
I lost internet for a second. That's a really good question, and that's exactly where organizations are struggling, right? Because it is moving so fast that it's almost impossible for organizations to have a uniform approach. But that's also where I think the decisions around shared templates for working is coming in. You have to do that, especially when you're talking about business processes that are essential to the organization. We cannot have, I come from 30 years of working in medical device and pharmaceutical organizations that are highly, highly regulated, and also auditors coming in often and making sure that you follow procedure and so forth. So we cannot allow for those types of industries to be going off in different directions. There has to be some common framework. There has to be some common templates. And then for benign tasks, it doesn't matter, you know, if you like, ChatGPT, God help you. If it's benign, who cares what tool people are using? But if it's business related, there has to be some rules, has to be some templates around it. So I actually respectfully disagree a little bit with our friend from Palo Alto.
I think it's an interesting take. I get it. And I think I guess it also depends on the industry too, because I think there's going to be some industries that are moving. Like when you think of industries, is there an industry that moves faster than cybersecurity right now? So if you are on a fringe field, mm-hmm. like a cybersecurity, where it's, you know, it's cat and mouse.
Right. Right.
All right.
Yes. Well, yeah, I don't know really what to say that would be appropriate, because, you know, hopefully when you're talking about cybersecurity for organizations, that is of such importance that hopefully cybersecurity companies and network infrastructure companies, they have fixed ways of working, right? Have some specific frameworks in place. But I understand the challenge. It is a real challenge. Yeah. And one of the things that I spend a lot of time on with my team is to help with the AI literacy within organizations, so they themselves can help put some of these standards and templates in place and make the right decisions. So, for example, I'm working with a company where they are very new on the AI journey, so I'm working with them on this AI readiness initiative within the organization that involves both training of the employees, training of leadership, and AI governance workshops, where we're making some of these decisions and without tying things too tight. But making sure that we right-size the conversation, right-size the decisions that we are making for the particular company. Where I wanted to go is one of the latecomers to this AI journey is the company's CFO. And I have agreed to actually do a one-on-one series of sessions with the CFO to not train, but to show how she can benefit from AI, right? So she has some specific tasks that are repetitive, and she didn't know where to start and which tool to use and so forth. So I am sitting down with the CFO over a number of sessions and help her get through the different belts, you know, and hopefully we'll get her to a black belt one day. Where, you know, she can not only make the right decisions for her team and organization, but also herself be proficient in the use of AI tools.
No, I'm thinking a business owner right now is listening. We know that for sure. Tons of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. most have not done any kind of progress or haven't done any kind of implementation at all. But what right. we do know is that their employees are already using ChatGPT and Claude.
Yes.
We know that for sure. And I will give some more yes. context for this, Karen. I would have, my company, the Coaching Academy, we would have done a vacancy notice just on last week. And every one of those persons, 65 persons, applied for that position, and all of them would have used ChatGPT or Claude to revamp the CVs and their cover letters. We know the lines, we know the tone of language. All of them, not one have written it. So we are aware that the business community is already either dabbling with it or they have some form of it. So we already know that business owners,
yes.
CEOs, you're listening right now. Your workers are using it right now. How do they now put some? What is their next step? Would you recommend, Mr. Feldum, that they should do to get some kind of order? Like you have to say order in the court here and start to get things going in the right direction to protect their company and data.
Yeah, there's a number of things that should happen, and I would put it all under the umbrella of AI governance. And again, AI governance sounds so awfully boring and controlling, but AI governance is more than that. It is to put some both tools and decisions and standards in place, best practices, that people can benefit from. And, you know, we should not, as organizations, allow our employees to be using their personal AI tool. Because if you are in organizations that deal with confidential information, as many of us are, you have to be using one of the corporate type accounts that are offered by ChatGPT and Claude, etc., where you have the opportunity to not share outside of the organization how you are using the tool and what you are putting in prompts and what the results are coming back, because if you're not very careful and you use your personal account for those types of confidential information and you do not have the right security settings in place, that information that you are posting, you may be uploading attachments or spreadsheets and confidential documents and so forth, can and will probably be used for training purposes the large language models, right? So one of the ways to control that is, as an organization, make a very quick decision. We did it for one company this week, overnight, right, where exactly the situation that you described, Curtis, where 82% of the population, within the company, they had their personal accounts. We knew it because we had sent out a survey. And that is not fantastic, right? So overnight, we made corporate versions available, send out invitations, and then told people that, you know, going forward, you should be using these tools and the reason why. And that message is then built into the training sessions that we are running in parallel. All about communication. It's all about making sure that you bring people into the decisions that you're making, why you're making them. People will understand. There may be one or two, you know, outliers that, go rogue, but you can't control everything. But right. You have to, as business leaders, definitely implement a corporate license for your team, and then you have a solid foundation to continue building on. The corporate tools also allow you to do some of the sharing that I mentioned earlier, where you're building in templates for teams and organizations to use. You do not have that in your private public versions of these tools.
That's a very crucial point, because I can only imagine how much company data is dumped into personal chat GPTs. You know, from all aspects. Right. I could only imagine. Now, Klaus, you've been working with organizations around the world. When we are talking AI readiness in business, do you come across primarily where businesses are struggling from a technology standpoint? Do you see leadership as the biggest hurdle, or do you see organizational issues as some of the biggest challenge? What do you think is that big primary hurdle that you are running into when you're working with organizations?
I see a little bit of everything. And actually, going back to our friend from Palo Alto, I think time is against us. Things are moving so fast that our leaders, they don't know what to make decisions about. But what I see often is that they don't, whatever decision that is, they don't make it fast enough, right? So it really comes back to, it really comes back to leadership. Leadership play an enormously important role in organizations' use of AI. And what I also see, unfortunately, is when you then make that decision too quickly, we even see it with certain governments, you invest all of this money in AI, but before you have actually had a meeting with yourself and figure out how are we going to use it, you know, you need to put your strategy front and center of the conversation around how are we going to use AI within our organization? Don't go out and invest in AI and then figure out afterwards how we're going to use it, right? So you need to have some serious strategy conversations. You need to think about where in the organization do we have inefficiencies, where can we benefit from improved business processes that could be supported by AI, and very importantly, which tools do we have that already have AI features embedded?
Right.
We talked about briefly cloud earlier, right? And many cloud software solutions, and even some of the more conservative on-premise solution AI on-premise solutions have AI built into them. So I'm getting ahead of myself because I'm looking at the clock. There are tools built into our business applications that are AI enabled, right?
Yeah.
And so I think you need to have a strategy conversation. You know, what are we here for? What's the purpose of our organization? Who are our target groups? And then fit in AI around those conversations. Where is it that we have opportunities? Where is it that we have challenges? And then get some help looking at what tools you already have available so you don't reinvent the wheel. Don't bring an AI tool in if the capabilities you're looking for are already available at your fingertips.
That reminds me. One thing I've seen over the years and across the Caribbean is that we don't have technology problems. We have people problems.
Yeah.
It's the people problems that we have to solve. Because people always have money and people are always willing to spend the money if it makes sense, right? We will throw money at the problem. But AI, I think one of the biggest hurdles with AI is you have to think differently with AI.
Yeah.
And AI is only as good as your creativity and your depth of knowledge in that field. And I think if you can put those two things together, like if you know a topic deeply, when you have the creativity with AI, because you can do some incredible things with the tools that we have right now. But if you don't have the creativity to even think outside the box to test out some of those ideas and theories, then you're never really going to get the best out of the tools and what we're using. Curtis, go ahead.
No, I'm just kind of summarizing mentally, especially with the businesses having the opportunity to adopt AI, that is going to reveal a lot about the organization. It's going to reveal the inefficiencies. It's going to reveal the structure being off. It's going to reveal the fact that there's a communication problem within the business. It's going to reveal the fact that too much information is known by somebody who has all the information in their head and it's not documented. There's no policies. There's so many things that this opportunity for AI adoption is going to uncover, and I think it can only help organizations to get better rather than keep sweeping things under the rug. And I'm going to be sitting with that thought for a very long time to see how we can answer some of those, become answers for some of those solutions, you know? My thoughts.
I would actually, so we have talked about several C's here. We have talked about change, and we have talked about the thing that you mentioned, Karen, that creativity is really key, right? You need to have the creativity to see where the opportunities lie. But I think the third C here is courage. You need to have the courage. You you need to work with your peers within the leadership team, and I'm addressing the business leaders here, and put your heads together. Define pilots. Find out where in your organization is it that you have the opportunities to leverage AI fast. Don't wait till next year. Don't wait till next month. Do it now. And if you need help, get some help in to structure that meeting, structure that conversation, and help you get out on the other side with some courageous decisions around where you can take AI next for your organization.
We have two final questions before we wrap, so I'll ask mine and Curtis can ask his final question. Now, this is something that me and you were talking about offline that I wanted to give you a real chance to address. Klaus, there is still a belief that AI and the market will wait until we are comfortable and completely ready. So what would you say to the business leader that is listening here right now who believes that they can safely postpone this entire AI conversation for another 2 or 3 years until the market matures? What do you say to them?
Well, that may be a safe decision to make right now. It may feel good that you don't need to run into making very difficult decisions about this new technology. You may not be completely familiar with the capabilities of AI, your organization. You don't think maybe any able to benefit. But actually, what you're making a decision for there is what I think looks like a quiet erosion. You will lose ground, and you may not find out until it's too late, right? Because your competition is making decisions to move themselves forward, right? You have competition that you need to look at. I'm not encouraging panic. I am encouraging that you have a careful, strategic approach to this, but that you move now. Otherwise, your business may actually lose ground.
Yeah, I would say urgency. Urgency is not fear-mongering, but it's an urgent matter to ensure that your business is positioned for this season that we are in, this era, because it's just going to go forward. And as we always say to each other, Karen, we ain't going back. We can't put the Pandora back into the box and pretend it doesn't exist and let's all pretend AI. It is not going to happen. It's just not us to now position ourselves well. Now, my final question is, if somebody's listening right now, a CEO, a business owner, and they're saying, all right, I agree that this needs to happen, and then this needs to happen now. What is their next step? Because they might not even know who to call or who, what do they do? What is their next step in getting their business towards or on that journey of AI readiness and adoption?
Right. There are many brilliant people in Trinidad, and there's no shortage of talent and expertise. There are several companies, including my own, that can help you with such a conversation. And I think that it is very important to get that conversation started now. If you do not have that facilitator internally, reach out to the technical community that specialize in AI and business change. You don't want to just look for a technology company. You're also looking for a partner who can come in and understand your business, understand it well, and guide you along the path where you can safely make the next steps. To just add to my point from Karen's question earlier, nobody will be knocked out by AI, right? That's the fear-mongering messages that we are hearing. But what we may do as businesses is to be quietly out-competed by our competitors, right? So while we're waiting, while we're sitting around and waiting, we're not sure the competitors' costs, because that is one of the main differentiators of AI, is that it can help you drive down costs. When you get more efficient as an organization, you drive down costs, and then that means that your competitor may be more competitive before you become competitive if you don't start making these decisions.
Brilliant. I fully agree. And if you can produce a result faster and cheaper than your competitors, chances are you stand to, you stand to be around a lot longer than your competitors. So that is definitely something to be thinking of. Klaus, I will allow you to have the closing remarks
to the Freedom 106.5 family when we're thinking about business being AI ready. What are your closing remarks for the digital world?
Well, I think that, Curtis, you reminded us that this is not about panic. We are not encouraging fear-mongering at all. But I do feel that it is incredibly important for organizations, both private and public, to get together now, have transparent conversations within the leadership team, even have transparent conversations with your teams, because as Karen reminded us, they are using AI. So there's both a where can we use AI effectively as an organization, where may there be some efficiencies that we can introduce and help make us more productive, more efficient, and lower cost maybe. But also on the safety side, as we mentioned, there's data privacy, there's confidential information there that you certainly want to make sure that you take ownership of. So those are the key messages, along with the last encouragement, and that is around the creativity, around the courage to look for pilots within your organization to implement AI quickly in certain areas and then get quick results. See where that may have benefited so you can quickly move on to the next opportunity.
Agreed.
So good.
Klaus, where can the Freedom Family find you online to follow you or reach out to you to ask any questions business related? Where can they find you? I think we just lost Klaus.
There's a lot of rain on this side. It's totally overcast.
Okay.
And no, he should be back.
We still have quite a bit of a storm here in the northwest, so I'm not too far from Port of Spain. So where they can find us is velarisglobal.com or even shorter, velaris.ai. That would bring you to our website, and there's our contact information and our services that we provide, which is both business services, consultancy, and AI training.
Perfect. Klaus, thank you for taking the time and joining us on the Digital World. I'm sure our listeners were picking up some good nuggets that you were laying down for us. We look forward to connecting with you again in the future. Thank you, Klaus.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.